Welcome to the Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast. On this episode, a tornado of news, including Marvel and Netflix finally parting ways officially, reviews of Alita and How to Train Your Dragon 3, and our topic this week, we are going to discuss the found footage genre, how to save it, and then build a perfect found footage film. Let's get on with the show. And joining me today are my fellow hosts, Johnny Davenport.
Hey, Aaron, how you doing today?
I'm doing good, Tex. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. I don't know why I'm talking like this, but I'm going to try it the whole show. That way people think I'm actually excited.
Oh, God, please don't. All right, Amanda Sink.
Hello, hello. I have not done steroids like Johnny apparently has and has gotten really buffed up for this episode.
Acid. That's what that is.
Oh, okay.
You don't talk like a puppet on steroids.
It's just cocaine, goddammit.
Oh, we have so many news bits that came out this week.
It was a rough week.
It was a swarm of things.
Yeah, my head hurts.
People are mad. People are mad at Disney, but then they should be mad at Netflix. So now they switched it to Netflix, and then they're mad at whatever the kid on Empire. People are just mad.
Story is
craziest
wild.
Story ever. We're not going to talk about it here, but Google it.
But if you Google it, you're going to have the story has just gone in so many different directions.
That's how I like my news.
Forth.
I like my news to be confusing. Unverified. And unverified and wrong. That's what I like. Are you guys ready to talk about some movie stuff?
I'm ready to talk about
Let's
this
Narvel.
Narvel?
What?
Narvel no more.
Yeah, I was going to say I'm really excited to talk about this Marvel Netflix news, but I said Narvel.
We got it. We caught up.
Okay, good.
We're also going to talk about found footage, which I believe is the only place in the world that's speaking about found footage currently.
That's probably true.
Kind of a dying genre, wouldn't you say? I mean, it's going to bounce back. All genres do, but...
Well, let's save right this now. Part for the discussion.
No, let's do it now. Let's throw everything fine. Off. Okay, we'll move on.
Is now or now later?
That's a joke that'll pay off at the very, very end of the show. All right. So here we go. We have a lot of news. And then, of course, the Netflix and Disney thing, which we're going to talk about separately, and more in line with what that means business-wise than just losing our favorite Marvel shows. But there were so many things. I'm going to run through them. I want everybody to listen. This is fascinating. How many cool projects were announced? How many renewals were announced? We're going to get through them all at once. I'm going to do an almost auctioneer-like, but slower. So like a
Micro Machine Man,
like a sexy auctioneer.
Because you can't do a fast auctioneer.
I will trip over every word. I'll sound like John. Nobody wants that. Nobody needs that.
I don't even want that. I don't understand you better, too.
Get through it. Nobody understood. John, I got everything you said, man. I like this. That's good.
He's got it, like, transcripted for you.
Okay, so here you go. You ready?
Someone speaking my language.
You guys ready? Here you go. Spike Lee is teaming up with Black Panther Chadwick Boseman for a Netflix flick called The Five Bloods. Set in the Vietnam War, where several veterans head back to the jungle to put their souls back together again. Netflix is also doing a new series starring Dennis Quaid, which you found out last week. Yeah, I love that guy. That follows a family around Christmas, and future seasons would center around other holidays and Merry Happy Whatever. Jack Ryan was renewed for its third season before the second season has even finished filming. That's amazing. Amazon is looking for an A-list star to replace Julia Roberts for Homecoming second season. They have announced that Man in the High Castle will end with season 4. John is going to cry inside.
I'm okay.
Okay. And they further announced that they will be making original films that will skip theaters and debut exclusively on Amazon Prime. So they're trying to go after that Netflix and HBO business. Paddington is getting a TV version of the popular series with Ben Whishaw as the voice. Colin Farrell has signed on to The North Water, a BBC whaling drama series where a captain is stuck in the Arctic with a psychopath. The Breaking Bad movie, which follows Jesse on the run, will air on both AMC and Netflix, and I believe it's going to air on Netflix first, which is nuts. The director of Black Panther, Ryan Coogler, is producing a film starring Get Out's Daniel Kaluuya, I've heard it both ways, and Sorry to Bother You's Lakeith Stanfield, revolving around actual Black Panther Party leader Fred Hampton and his betrayal of William O'Neill. And finally, Psych, the movie 2, has officially been greenlit. Whew! Thank you. Now I'm going to do that one more time, really fast. Now, of all of those news bits, what stood out for you the most?
I guess Breaking Bad, if I have to choose.
Yeah, that's what choices are all
about. Well, you said what stood out for you, and I had a few things that stood out for me.
That's why I said most, because you don't know how to do one thing.
Well, you know, I wish I would have had the time to contemplate this further, because this is a really tough decision. But I do have a couple of questions. Why is Julia Roberts being replaced?
She doesn't want to do another season?
Yeah. That's... One season was good for her. She's like, all right, that was cool. I did TV and the show did all right. Let somebody else take it.
That feels really weird. I mean, I haven't watched the show, so maybe it would work with the dynamic of the show. But to have, she was like the leading lady of the show.
It was always known.
Okay.
Yeah. She's still an executive producer.
She's also the producer of it.
All right. Well, as long as it still works for the show, that's fine. And then
yeah, it's probably going to work for the show. I didn't listen to the podcast, but I'm sure it'll work for the show.
And then also for the Amazon.
Is this your way of trying to get all your mentions?
No, these weren't my mentions. Nah. No.
Your mentions?
My mentions. But Amazon Prime putting those movies out and skipping theaters, doesn't that mean that they're not going to be contenders for an Oscars award? That's so they don't care?
That's what that means. Yeah. They're done going for the gold.
It's good for them to do that. Netflix, you know, kind of did the same thing. They were like, screw it. Let's just put out content and then we can start going for the gold. Whereas Amazon was trying to leapfrog that whole process and be like, no, pay attention to us because we're Amazon and we have stuff. So it's good for them to take that step back and just focus on good content versus just trying to throw everything out there and see what sticks.
I suppose so. But what if they have something that sticks that they really want to have? Go to the theater and that could win an award. Now they're just kind of sticking themselves.
I've got a feeling they're gonna pick and choose. They're not gonna make that mistake. Yeah. And who cares?
Well, it's just a weird choice as a business. That's a weird choice to basically exclusively remove yourself from that awards category for all of your new original films.
That's only gonna matter if your movies are award worthy. They're not. That means they're gonna make movies that are geared toward general audiences. That's what that means.
That's true. No Roma.
Roma 2. Maybe they'll make Roma 2. What about you?
Electric Boogaloo?
What about you, John? What anything stick out of all that?
There's a lot of things that stick out that I really wanted to talk about. But the thing that kind of is stuck in my craw is this whole idea of a Breaking Bad movie. I don't think it's actually necessary to do that. And I'm a fan of the show. I just don't know why we're doing a movie now on following Jesse. Does Aaron Paul need the money?
The answer to that is yes, I believe. Yeah, he's
broke. And who cares?
I want to see it.
Hell yeah.
Or is it because you got a satisfying ending with the series finale, you don't really need to see more escapades with Jesse?
Yeah, I don't need to see Jesse on the run being like, whatever, bitch, I don't need to see it. you know, it's just, he went off into the moonrise and disappeared and that's all he needs. I don't want any further of that story. It was great the way it ended.
I am worried about it. I'm legitimately worried. I mean, obviously the showrunners and the cast, they're exceptional. They've Better Call Saul, Breaking Bad, everything they've done has been great. I still worry because I love the way that the character was left where I can imagine what he was doing. So I do understand that.
I want more Aaron Paul. I'm okay with this.
Well, then get him a job someplace else.
How am I going to get him a
pizza place that you were supposed to get your pizza from?
Oh.
Did you watch The Path on Hulu?
The Path?
Yeah, his TV series that was on Hulu.
No, I didn't know he had a TV series on Hulu.
That's probably why he's back to doing Breaking Bad.
Yeah, but I'm okay with that because I liked his character.
Sometimes we need to let things go, don't you think?
No.
Yeah.
Elsa didn't. She said to let stuff go, and then look at she's doing a Frozen 2. So obviously,
that was the whole Disney released the trailer for Genie that went bad. So they're like, quick, let's break the glass and show something else. And
why do people hate that blue Genie? I don't think it's that bad.
I just don't think it's necessary.
I think blue nipples are weird, but outside of that, it's fine.
Were his nipples blue?
His nipples were blue. So you want a blue body with like regular skin colored nipples?
I don't know. I guess I just didn't think about it.
I don't want any nipples. I just nippleless would be great.
Right. They should just do the Tao of Batman. When in doubt, don't do nipples.
Exactly. I'm fine with that. That's what we should do. I didn't think it looked bad, though. I
mean, it was okay, but the regular Genie where he is not blue, he looks like super cool. They could have just used that for the whole movie.
I agree with that. I feel like they're getting a little too beholden to the original one.
Yeah.
Can't do blue face.
Stop. Frozen 2, though, didn't look that great. I'll be honest. I was not. I let it go.
I never even watched the first one. God,
I know. You know what? I deserve that, too. That was, everyone has made some lame let it go joke, and I just stooped to that level right there.
And yours was worse than all of the others.
Wow. That's unnecessary. That's really unnecessary. I'm personally really excited about the Ryan Coogler project because I don't know much about the Black Panthers other than what I've seen in random biopics. So I'm curious to see what they do with that. And both of those actors are just phenomenal. So I can't wait to see what they do with that part.
How did neither of you pick Psych 2 as your most exciting news?
That should be a
because given. Everyone knew we were going to say that. And so we had to go against the grain. That's why.
Exactly. And plus, I said it last week. I called it before it was announced, didn't I? I pay attention.
That's true.
You did.
Yeah, Amanda, if you were paying attention last week, you would have remembered that Aaron already said that Psych 2 was happening and he was super excited.
I remember now. That should count.
No, it doesn't.
Is now or is now later?
And still nobody understands that yet. All right.
They're going to be so mad.
We're going to move on. This is going to be an interesting conversation. So Netflix finished their axing of Marvel shows as they formally canceled The Punisher and Jessica Jones. Much like Daredevil, they waited for the series to hit a month before canceling The Punisher, but Jessica Jones still hasn't even aired yet. On the one side, I can attest that both Daredevil and Punisher did finish their latest seasons with very satisfying finales. Iron Fist actually was pretty solid as well. But it still hit a lot of fans in the gut. But instead of lamenting about how we wish those shows were still in the air or not, because they will probably come back in some form, at least after the embargo is up, which, just so you know, Netflix has an embargo for 2 years, so nobody can do anything with those properties for 2 years after they air. People keep saying, they can go to Hulu, they can do this. They can't do anything for 2 years. It's part of the contract. Unless Netflix let them out of it, why would they do that? I want to know if you guys believe this to be smart business as Disney amps up their streaming service and Netflix sees Marvel as direct competition, or are they being bitter bitches because Disney is coming for them?
After this weekend of bitching the Umbrella Academy, I'm going to go with this is smart business because if anything, Umbrella Academy showed me that there is a whole world of comic book stories out there that people are hungry for and they just don't know it. I really enjoyed what they did with it. It seemed to have even a better production value to it than the Marvel shows did. And it seemed to have a bit more of a better story and a little bit more heart than those Marvel shows did. So I started thinking about what could they possibly else do. And there's Boom Comics that they can mine for other stories. There's more Dark Horse comics. There's some Image comics that they can mine. So why not bring those stories that people do enjoy and not a lot of people have readily accessed over the years and start showing newer, different stories and not regurgitate the same thing over and over again?
I can agree with that. You mentioned the embargo for the 2 years. Mm-hmm. I was kind of looking into it because I'm a little saddened by this Punisher news.
Me too, man. I love the Punisher.
I just started watching the show.
One of my favorite shows of the last couple of years, and it's gone.
So what I had read, and hopefully you guys will have more information than me, is that it might not have been included in the original contract, which would have had the 2 year embargo in it. Do you think
that's... No, it's still 2 years. Even Jenny Bernthal said that.
Really? Yeah. Oh, way. That's
so basically, from the time it airs, January, I think it was January 18th, right. Punisher season 2 dropped. 2 years from that date. Now, that I don't know if that means they can start working on a new season so that it could drop, you know, 2020, January, or 2021, I guess. But they can't do anything. They can't release a new property until then. I don't know. I think they can do movies. They just can't do TV shows.
Do you think that you would want to have Jon Bernthal or Kristen Ritter, whoever those characters were, take on that role again, or would you rather see them reinvent the properties?
I'm a little over reinventing the properties for the sake of, if you can get the same actors, then you should stick with the same actors.
Yeah,
this question strikes to me of Batman fatigue.
I'm sick of recastings too.
Yeah,
you know, there's no reason to recast every one of those roles. I've thought was really well done.
Yeah.
And I saw Mike Coulter got cast on a pilot called Evil that he's going to be doing with the Good Wife creator. So he might have a whole new series to be on. He might not even be available to come back. He played Luke Cage. But overall, I'll be honest. Daredevil, And the and I didn't see this conversation I didn't want to get into, but we're into it anyway. The Punisher and Daredevil had satisfying series endings. As much as I love, especially the Punisher, I freaking love the Punisher. It had a great ending. I don't need any more. I really don't. Unless you're going to do it this with the same actor and you're going to continue the same storyline, I don't want any more. If they're going to revamp it, I'm not interested. This is the third time already. I'm kind of tired. Fourth time. Sorry, this is the fourth time. Because we are counting Dolph Lundgren, whether they want
to. Well, how can you not?
Yeah, right. He was the best Punisher.
Whoa.
Just kidding. That's a joke, Thomas Jane. No, Johnny Bernthal was the best Punisher.
That's true.
I haven't seen other iterations, so he wins for me.
Thomas Jane was pretty good, though.
Yeah.
John Bernthal just made me care about his character. And it's weird because I saw an episode in season two before I saw season one. And that one episode in season two made me want to watch the first season. That's how good he was in that show. And it's just...
I'll be honest. On the same token, most of the shows aren't that good. Yeah, I said it on the record. I don't think Luke Cage is very good. Iron Fist was okay.
Defenders was boring.
I think it's bad. Defenders was just a slog. Daredevil had... The only thing good about season two was the Punisher. Season three was way better. I will admit that.
Jessica Jones season two
was bad.
I haven't even finished it.
It made me not want to watch Jessica Jones, and I freaking loved the first season. So it seemed like the shows were waning out anyway. Mm-hmm. I think Netflix just hedged their bets. You've got Disney Plus, and this is more the conversation I think is important because everybody's already had.
Well, like, I was just curious if you guys would want to see it remade.
But coming from Netflix's perspective, Disney Plus is literally going after their exact same audience.
Uh-huh.
So if they continue to do Marvel properties, you're basically plugging the competition. It's a free plug because Marvel's name comes before every single one of their properties. And then you have Disney Plus that is constantly going to be bombarding the same consumers with ads for other Marvel properties, probably more well-known properties. So why would that? It makes no sense.
Well,
I think John has a great point. Use properties that are underdeveloped and don't cost as much and doesn't have as expensive of a licensing issue. And isn't directly competing with you.
Well, Netflix has the advantage of having a brand. I mean, obviously, Disney is an incredible brand, but Netflix has created the brand that they can produce original content. They can take something out of nothing and create a masterpiece. That's what they've cultivated over these years. So they don't need
very good shows. Let's ease up on masterpieces.
But I mean, if you look at the original content in ratio to other original content pieces that are coming out, they're the ones with the unique ideas and they're the ones who are bringing those to life. So in ratio to the other original content we're getting from other shows or other networks, Netflix is blowing it out of the water.
Can I ask you a question in regards to that? Do you think it's so much they're blowing it out of the water or they're just throwing so many darts at the board, you're going to get a few that stick?
I'm going with darts at the board on that. Because they do have some duds. It happens. If you look at the list of canceled Netflix shows, it's just as many as anybody else. But the shows they do have, and they do stick around, they cultivate into something great. So it is more about darts at the board than it is anything else.
But is that even a bad thing? Because they're getting so much talk and almost never does Netflix
have... money's got to come from somewhere, otherwise you end up as MoviePass.
True, but Netflix is not getting necessarily bad press from any average type shows that they've produced for original content because they're the ones that do stick are so well done and adored by the fan base.
Apparently masterpieces.
Well, in ratio, right. can you not agree that in ratio to other networks who are producing quote unquote original content, that Netflix is the quote unquote network that seems to be giving us the best original content?
I can agree that I don't watch networks anymore.
Because Netflix has given us so much.
Because I have plenty to watch on Netflix and Hulu, yeah. I guess I do watch some network stuff because Hulu has some.
A couple of things, right. But Netflix is kind of winning that over. They're the ones who have taken over because of cable. I mean, Hulu does have the advantage of still being able to watch cable shows on there. But Netflix is like, we've got a ton of stuff here, man. We're doing all right.
Netflix is doing great. And if they keep on with the model that they're working on, there's a good chance they'll be able to stand up to Disney Plus, no problem. The the thing that I'm happy to see is I'm happy to see them get rid of this the Marvel shows. I'm happy to see that eventually it looks like DC is going to be pulling their shows away, because the question is no longer going to be, well, what am I going to watch? Is it going to be a Marvel show or DC show on Netflix? I'm fine with that because I'm ready for some new stuff. As much as I love comics, as much as I enjoy the content that comes from those two houses of comics, I also know that there's so much more out there to mine. And if Netflix is going to be the one bringing that out here, then I'm so good for that. And I'm just excited at the possibilities of what they can do, that stories people don't even know a lot about. So you don't have too many people going and saying, well, so-and-so would never do that. Well, how do you know? Because you didn't read the comics. Don't tell me you did, because this is like a very small batch of people read this comic. And I'm good with that.
You know what I hope it does? I hope it inspires people to find some of the other properties on Netflix that aren't comic related. There are a lot of great shows out there that nobody's going to watch because they're too busy catching up on the Defender universe or whatever you want to call it.
And like we pointed out, when it comes to those Marvel series, you have, of the four shows, 2.5, 3.5 good seasons out of all the seasons that were given to us of those two shows or those four shows.
I agree. Well, I would say that the first season of Daredevil, third season of Daredevil, and all of Punisher, and then the first season of Jessica Jones. And Iron Fist was a decent all the way across.
So 5.5.
Yeah, but only three great things, great seasons, and then the rest were just okay or
real. Right. Granted, that was Marvel putting that together. That wasn't Netflix putting those things together. That was a Marvel house doing it. And then Netflix was just doing the distribution. So I'm not going to bang this drum that Marvel can do no wrong. As much as I love Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., it took Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. a whole season to get through before it started getting interesting. And then a whole another season before it really started getting amazing. And that just kept on getting better. That's not a good track record for a TV show. To Aaron's point, when you have to say it's a great show, but you have to get through the first season, it's a problem. As much as I don't want to have to admit to saying that, it is a problem.
Do you guys think that the decision Netflix is making is one to say, Disney, you're not going to absorb us? Because Disney does absorb everything.
I believe it was a definite slap to Netflix's or to Disney's face and saying, yeah, we see that you're coming for us, so we're not going to continue to market your brand.
Right, but they could easily, I mean, at some point, Disney's probably going to offer to buy them out and absorb that company.
I don't think they are. Well, they might offer it, but I don't think Netflix is going to do
right.
it right
and
now.
Right, and so that's what I'm saying is, do you think this is Netflix's way of saying, like, first of all, we're going to continue to compete with you, but also you're not going to, just because you've taken over pretty much everything else in the world, we're not going to be one of those. We've created this brand that we stand behind, and we're not going to let you become this huge monstrosity of a company.
Well, I don't
more than they already are.
I'm not sure I care about whether or not they think of what thing or left thing or what. I'm not sure I care about what they think. Well, I just want to see what they do.
You might want to care because this is something to contemplate, because
could
if they decide to give into it,
could that even happen? I mean,
Hulu gave into them.
Well, they bought Hulu.
Right. Exactly. That's my point is that they could try to do the same thing with Netflix.
At what point do you become a monopoly? You've already got Fox, you've got Disney, you've got Star Wars, you've got Lucasfilm, you've got Hulu. I can't see how Netflix would not push you into the monopoly, which is you can't do. I can't see that would not be a monopoly. I think Disney's already a monopoly, but you know.
Right.
But it's very close. But you put Netflix in there, there's no way.
Well, Amazon Prime would still exist, so they wouldn't be completely monopolized.
Does that count? It's like going to a family reunion and then you're like, hey, I'm a lawyer. Hey, I'm an accountant. And then there's your cousin that works at the Quick Stop. No, that's not the same thing.
You know what I'm saying?
He has
though.
A job, yes, but he's not.
But I think it's something that we should.
I'm not knocking anybody that works at a Quick Stop, by the way, because it's a fictional location.
I'm just saying that I think it is something to keep on our minds, that I don't want Netflix to get absorbed into that, which Disney seems to do. They have a way.
Merger.
Of merging every single company that they run into.
I think they're just going to do their own thing.
What I'm saying is I'm wondering if you guys see it the same way I do, that Netflix making the stance against Disney is a bold way of saying, we're not going to take it. You know what I'm saying?
I'm trying to ignore it, mostly.
Okay. All right. Wonderful.
Just kidding. John, I don't see that at all. Do you?
Huh? Is now or is now later?
That joke's going to get old.
Well, so was that tangent, but you still did it.
Later it is.
Bazinga. Just for the people that were really worried about it, per Marvel TV's Jeff Loeb, that's an interesting name, he said he put out a whole letter to fans. Our network partner may have decided that they no longer wanted to continue telling the tales of these great characters, but you know Marvel better than that. Yeah, we do, Jeb. You're definitely going to milk this crap for as much as you can. As Matthew Murdock's dad once said, the measure of a man is not how he gets knocked down to the mat, it's how he gets back up, i.e. they'll be back.
Right.
In some form or another.
They even said to be continued.
Yeah. Just bring Blade back, man. That's all I want.
Ooh. Yeah.
Before Snipes is too old. Yeah, I said Snipes. I don't want anybody else. Maybe that dude from The Purge.
Yeah.
The last Purge.
Ilan Noel.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. Is that right?
It sounds good to me.
Okay.
I've heard it both ways. And speaking of Disney Plus, they are also working on more Star Wars shows. They have a whole bunch in the pipeline now, and now there's reports of an Obi-Wan limited series. I just want to know, John, you're a big Star Wars fan. Are they just milking the hell out of this? Are you to the point where you just don't want any more Star Wars, or are you okay with TV shows and movies and whatever else they're going to come up with? Shorts, digital shorts, I don't know, puppet shows. I don't know what they're going to do.
I don't know what they're gonna do. I'm sure eventually I'll cough up the pony to be able to watch whatever it is Disney Plus has on it. But there's nothing that they've mentioned that makes me chomp at the bit. Obi-Wan. Okay, great. I would rather an Obi-Wan movie. But if you're gonna give me an Obi-Wan, if you have to give me an Obi-Wan TV show, I'm gonna be interested in seeing how you get Ewan McGregor in that on TV, because that would be interesting. I guess a dump truck of money in front of his house. I just like, this is one of those things that just makes me kind of nonplussed about the whole idea. I'm more interested in some newer stuff.
You know what? I'm actually at the point, and this is true. I was talking to a friend of mine. Now, why would I be lying about it? I am at the point where I don't want brands anymore for a while. I mean, I'm still see them. I know I'll see. I'll see Captain Marvel, and I'll see in Infinity War Part 2 / Endgame. But I am branded out. I am so branded out. I am so more excited about things I've never heard of before than I've ever been. Because it feels like there's not much of it.
Well, there's plenty of it. We're just not seeing it because we're being bombarded with those branded things you're talking about.
Yeah, it's all I ever see. So I'm going out and trying to seek out new IPs, new properties, new whatever. Even if it's a new franchise, so I have something new, some new brand to look at. I just want some new stuff. I'm tired of the same old thing.
I'm not interested in this Star Wars show situation.
You're not a big Star Wars fan, are you?
Yeah, I am. I love Star Wars.
Okay.
But
how dare you?
But
how dare you love Star Wars?
No, I think you meant
no. How dare you question her Star Wars fandom? Oh,
yeah. I didn't mean to. I'm sorry.
But it is getting a little overwhelming. Like, the movies I was cool with, and now it's like everywhere they just want Star Wars, Star Wars, Star Wars, Star Wars, Star Wars.
It's what they did with Marvel, so.
I know.
I'll get excited for things when I hear they're actually good. I'm starting to filter out some of this whole new stuff. If we're going to do this. Okay, great. I'll wait until it's actually here before I start getting up excited or anything.
All right, let's move on. Our Patreon supporters, I just want to say our show is independently funded. Therefore, all the expenses are from our own pockets, and Patreon helps fans support their favorite podcast. On the same token, we don't believe in just asking for handouts, so we do offer bonus content exclusively through Patreon for our supporters. Depending on what tier you select, there's $1, $3, $5, $10, and even $20. And at $3, you do get a monthly bonus episode called Bad Movie Night, where we discuss a film that critics or others deem a bad movie. But we enjoy it. Amanda, you want to tell them about the most recent one we just did?
Well, let's discuss. Gothica came out on Netflix, and so we knew we had to take this opportunity.
Let's simmer down on you knew.
I backed her up on it.
Okay. Yeah, John was on board, and you're more than welcome to listen to that because it was fun.
Okay, thank you.
And
for
you
that.
Guys are wrong.
You can find that out, and you can hear Amanda and John have a nice little bite. So we have that. Then at $5, you can get Bad Movie Night Plus. There's an exclusive monthly bonus episode where we discuss things we don't normally talk about on a regular show. Oftentimes, we'll get a little bit more personal and tell you behind-the-scenes stuff. And as you go up, there are more perks. You can even pick a topic or possibly guest for one. That's what's going to happen later in the show. That's a Patreon topic that we're talking about with found footage. And once you sign up, you get immediate access to everything we already have done in the past. Now you understand what it is. So if you want to support the show, patreon.com/thehollywoodoutsider, patreon.com/thehollywoodoutsider. And we want to welcome our newest Patreon supporter, Sam Hupp. Thank you, Sam. Thanks for your contribution.
Hey, Sam. Hi.
Sup?
Amanda just waved, Sam. I hope you could see that to the audio waves.
To be fair, you were doing hand motions as you were talking about Patreon. Like, you were really enthusiastic, like you were standing at a podium trying to energize people.
I just feel like I'm Italian sometimes. It's weird. Everything. All right. We got a couple spoiler-free reviews. Alita, Battle Angel. Yeah, we saw it. Critics were okay to it. They weren't great to it, but they were okay to it. But we heard so much about this movie before it came out that people were just calling it a flop. I've seen countless times how it's already going to lose 200 and something million, blah, 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 even though it hadn't come out yet. Let's pump the brakes and actually hear more about it. In an unnamed junkyard circa 2563, Dr. Dyson Ito finds a severed cyborg head. He takes it home and reconstructs Alita's body with cyborg parts. Once she's alive and calibrated, Alita, who's played by Rosa Salazar, begins her quest to understand her origins and connection to Xalem. It's a city-sized ship that towers over Iron City, the last remnant of a brutal global war known as the Fall. She also longs to win the affections of Hugo, this weird hoodlum kid with a heart of gold who introduces Alita to the deadly sport of motorball, which is basically a bunch of cyborgs rolling around on a rink, beating the smack out of each other, trying to get a Quidditch ball.
NASCAR.
NASCAR with Quidditch. There you go. Of course, Alita
perfect
is...
perfect example.
Exactly. Alita is someone special, an ages-old weapon of destruction and the only known threat to Nova, who is, that's right, Edward Norton, the leader of Xalem, who can subconsciously control his surrogates. Alita is immediately deemed worthy of extermination by those under Nova's employment. Vector, who's played by Mahershala Ali, is the steely-eyed leader of the cause, while Sheeran, who's played by Jennifer Connelly, repairs their rogue galley of assassins. Oh, by the way, she's Ito's ex-wife, so that comes into play. Alita is a result of a collaboration between Robert Rodriguez and the great James Cameron. You never, ever bet against James Cameron, but everybody keeps doing it. And we've had a lot to say about the Jumbotron-sized eyes of Alita and how creepy they were.
You guys
trailers.
Do.
Yeah,
because they were creepy. I don't.
Now that we've all seen the film, how do you feel about Alita specifically as a character, John?
Oh, she was amazing. The way she emoted, the way Rosa treated her in her acting, just everything came through. And it was very sweet, very nice to watch. And I really enjoyed the character.
This is probably one of my favorite characters for like a woman who's come out in a very long time. And honestly, probably since Buffy. The movie wasn't as notable to me. I mean, I thought it was good. But the character itself is what sold me on this entire movie. Like, she felt real. She felt relatable. One of the things that hardly ever happens is a character, male or female, who is very strong and sure of themselves, but openly has their heart on their sleeve and isn't ashamed to be able to balance both strength and independence and being super loving and caring and just warm-hearted. And there was so much to love about her character that it completely shifted my opinion of this movie solely because of that character.
Really? You guys enjoyed the character that much? Was anybody bothered by the big eyes now that you have seen the movie? Anyone? Either one of you?
No.
I was initially, but as the movie progressed, I kind of let it go and I forgot all about it.
Okay. Same here. I found it to be a welcome distraction in a way, because she definitely stood out to me. She definitely stood out as, I don't want to say CGI, because she did feel real in a way, but she stood out in that when she's around everybody else, I just know she's different from everybody else, which played to the character in a very interesting way. It really worked for me. And I was pleasantly surprised by that, because I didn't see anything in any trailer I had seen that made me even want to see the movie, because I couldn't stand the look of the character in the trailers.
Really?
Yeah, which is really what surprised me, that I was so invested in her character by the end, when I knew the whole time, this is CGI, but I just bought into it. Maybe it's the performance, maybe it's a mix of the journey she goes on, or the strength of the character, and how she does come across very humanistic, and her journey feels like something you can get behind. I don't know what it was, but it just really worked. It brought it all home for me. So the movie is almost too much story, I would say. Mm-hmm. And it also ends on kind of a cliffhanger, the one I think that does resolve the movie, but does leave you wondering what will happen next. Was the story overstuffed? Was there too much story, Amanda?
Yes and no. I think they made it work. But had they not included so much into the movie, I think you would have had a better time enjoying the character that was presented to you and building on those relationships rather than it being story, 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 if that makes sense. Like, we could have enjoyed the characters a whole lot more if they weren't so busy always doing something and having, like, I want to say there's like three or four different storylines going on. Now, that's not to say I wasn't engaged in them, because I was definitely interested in it. And I followed along, but I think they could have benefited from kind of slimming that down a little bit.
I just felt like there a lot of this was very much world building. Whoever wrote this and whoever put this together wanted you to understand that there's a lot to this world. They wanted you to understand that there's a lot of possibilities. And I wouldn't be surprised if in a year or two we saw Alita 2 or we saw the sequel to this, because of the amount of world building that went into this and making this whole thing just so solid and so real for the viewer. That's where I see all the work going in. And I was okay with how rich or how deep the story was.
I thought it was overwhelming. It was overwhelming to the point where you could, about 20 minutes in, I was tired. I enjoyed it. Don't get me wrong. I really enjoyed the story. Seriously, there's too much story, but I still enjoy this movie a lot. I really do. But there was a point where I got to it and said, okay, slow your roll, man. Get to this movie before you introduce all this stuff. And you get about three quarters of the movie of the way through, and you know for a fact there's no way they can conclude what you think is going to happen. So they have to conclude it a different way, which they do. And I think it's a solid conclusion, but definitely points to, we actually have three movies in mind, or Nolan James Cameron six, that we have in mind that we're going to do at some point. But you never get the sense that it has to be done. So it leaves you enough in your imagination to kind of figure out where it's going to go. But also at a point where there's so much built up to, they have a whole another movie or two that they could flesh out because of what they built in this one.
Yeah, there's a lot of potential for more. And hopefully it does not go to six, because as much as I enjoyed this character, no franchise needs six. Well,
I don't think it's going to go to three, honestly. I don't even know if they're going to get a part two, because it depends on how it's going to do.
Well, I think James Cameron can make it happen. Or he'll just wait 15 years and then he'll be like, all right, it's time for the sequel.
You never know.
Well, that's what he did with Avatar.
He might do it. Okay, ultimately, this is a spectacle piece. It's all about popcorn and visuals and how much quote-unquote fun you have in the movie. So does it pop for you, Johnny?
It did pop for me. I really enjoyed what they gave us, and I'm just hoping that word of mouth gets out there and people end up going to go see this, because I would be interested in seeing more of this story. It seems like something that's a little bit new, a little bit different, and something we were just talking about earlier in this episode, and I think this would be so much of a better thing to invest our time in.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I would like to see more of this, and I'm hoping people do hear about it, because certainly the reviews and stuff aren't doing it enough justice, I don't think.
I mean, audiences are. I haven't heard many people that have actually seen
the totally,
movie
yeah.
not say they at least enjoyed it.
It's one of those where the critics are on an opposite end from the audience.
Hey, I'm a critic, and I reviewed it, and I gave it a positive. So it's not all... It's 4 out of 10 are not getting it right.
Okay, but when
aren't,
you...
Aren't
when,
you both critics?
Yeah.
Yeah, but I didn't do a review. Maybe we should have two reviews that bump the score, huh? Juice it a little bit. And then let's go back and fix Justice League.
Yeah. There's lots that we need to fix. But I'm hoping people like it. Like, go out... Well, it's not even about them liking it. It's about them just giving it a chance. And there's so many other things that came out that weekend that I think that's part of the problem, too. It had a lot of competition.
Yeah, but none of them really did that well. Happy Death Day 2 didn't do very well.
Right. It was a slow box office weekend. But when you also have three different movies, three different types of movies for people to see.
True. But event movies, they will come out for, and they did not come out for. Whatever the reason, I think I blame the eyes. I really do blame those big giant eyes.
Really?
People were turned off by the movie for some reason. Or maybe it was too...
I don't think it was marketed
matrix-y.
Enough.
Maybe it was...
I feel like it was marketed plenty. Anytime I went to go see the movies, it was there. Anytime I went to a YouTube, it was there. I think it was marketed pretty well.
But not on like social media, which I think
I just
could
said
have
YouTube.
Done... YouTube is different.
I saw it everywhere, so I don't.
I saw it in plenty of trailers before movies, but I just didn't see enough of it where, because normally those big types of movies, I get overwhelmed by the amount of ads I get for it. I don't know. Okay. All right.
It's just interesting to me that not that many people went to go see it, because it is an anime. It is a known anime, and there is a perceived huge anime following in this country. So I'm surprised that they didn't get as big showing as that would have led you to believe.
Maybe everybody was just poor from Valentine's Day.
No, this was the lowest grossing President's Day weekend, which is around Valentine's Day, same weekend almost every year, in 15 years. So that means people weren't that excited about Alita, period.
I don't think they realized that it had a good touching story either.
Well, hopefully fandom will help that out. But whatever the case, people were not interested in seeing it. I mean, yeah. Some people were, but the majority
not
were
a lot.
No, I think James Cameron should have called in some favors. This is what happens when he basically let Jack die. And I firmly believe this is moviegoers saying, this is on you. It's completely on you.
You let Jack die, so we're going to let your new movie die.
Yeah, bye, sucker. And also, Robert Rodriguez hasn't made a good movie in a while. This is his first good movie in a while. All right, if $10 is full price of admission, what do you give Alita, Battle Angel? John?
$7.
Amanda?
$7.50.
And I say $7. You know, we talked earlier about Patreon, and one of our Patreon members, Jack Saint, he wanted us to review this movie, his movie, as well as he picked the topic. And hey, you're a Patreon supporter and you hit the tier, we have to do what you say. That's how this works.
We are at your will.
We are at your mercy. Paranoia, what's that?
I said, oh, that's better.
Yeah.
At your mercy.
Paranoia Tapes 2 is the movie we're talking about. And in this sequel, it's available on Amazon Prime. In this sequel to Jack Hunter's Paranoia Tapes, we join Chase to find the missing pieces of what went wrong in the events of the first film. Each short was written and based on actual events. Some of the shorts shown are, in fact, the real deal with no special effects or altered footage. And Scott Clark is joining us for this review, as requested by our Patreon supporter. Scotty, you there?
I am here. There's really one reason that he asked me to be on this review.
You want to explain why?
Well, there's been an ongoing debate with The Hollywood Outsider for years about a certain movie and whether or not it was related to a certain holiday. And Jack actually called me out by name in this movie to tell me that I was wrong.
That Die Hard is a Christmas movie after all.
Hey, I wasn't going to. That movie which should not be named.
5 stars.
But that was my favorite part.
That sounds so narcissistic.
Yeah, it's a little bit of egomaniacal there.
Yeah, the writing was fantastic in that scene. I really liked the selection of name usage.
Wait, so you agree that the writing was spectacular, which means you agree that Die Hard is a Christmas movie?
No. I just like that he called me out.
No, I think I'm going to revert back to my prior statement. Bye, Johnny.
I just liked hearing my name. That's really what I'm doing. Yeah,
that's what it is.
You watched the movie to hear your name.
And he actually
I love that I've been here 30 seconds and we've already lost John.
Yeah.
And I also, we were also mentioned, all three of us from, well, Amanda, you weren't mentioned. Sorry.
I wasn't around.
You weren't around when obviously they filmed Paranoia Tapes too, but John.
You're still a wee lad.
Lad? I don't have a penis.
Lass. Sorry.
Lass.
This is awkward.
That's fine.
We don't see gender here at the Hollywood Outsider, so we yeah. just...
But you do see genitals, so...
No, I don't.
You no, see John's?
No, I do not. Either one
or
of anyone.
Scott's.
Anyway.
Wow, things got awkward since I left.
Yeah. By the way, if you don't know who Scott is a founding member of the Hollywood Outsider coming back for this. He also mentions us. He name checks us, myself, Scott, and our John, not just John, our John,
yeah,
in the movie. So thanks for that. Shout out and appreciation for mentioning us all on your movie.
Well, the podcast was specifically mentioned in the film like twice.
Yes.
And then the credits as well. Also,
and I'm fine with that.
Who was the other podcast that was next to John's name?
Let's only focus on us.
That's but part. I was like, did John leave us and he joined a new podcast and I didn't know about it?
Yeah, it did kind of look like that.
Oh, this is awkward.
He did leave.
Here it comes.
All right, so Scott, since you love everything about the writing in that one particular scene, what did you think of Paranoia Tapes 2? What did you think of Paranoia Tapes 2?
Well, I love the concept. What he's done is he's basically made, there was a film called VHS which it's kind of along those lines where you've got all these different vignettes that are going on. And they all kind of come around this hub of this character, Chase, that is talking to the camera because things are, he's trying to figure out what's going on. And we see it through the lens of these different videos of crazy things that happen in the world of paranormal activity, as it were. And there were some really clever ideas. And actually, when this started out, I was kind of impressed with the acting. I think we all kind of were mentioning that you know, this is done with I feel intentionally lower budget camera, you know, walking around the bar, but everybody actually was doing okay. I was believing that these weren't actors. Yeah. I believe that this guy was walking around interviewing people in the bar, and it actually kind of worked. I really liked that. There was the exorcism scene that was very off-putting. That kind of creeped me out a little bit.
The green, where it was like, had like the green tint one.
It was a night vision camera. It had that kind of effect going on it.
And then the spirit.
I really liked the scene where it was a man and, I can't remember if they were married or not, but it was a couple that were exploring a house that they like inherited. Mm-hmm. Someone from their family like passed away. And there was someone roaming through the house. And there was a scene where he went up to go in the attic to check it out. We're watching through the camera lens, but he can't get into the attic. So he actually picks up the camera and puts it into the attic to look around. And you see this dude standing there with like a giant machete. We actually rewound it to go back and look at it, because how did he not see that? Oh, he's holding the camera up.
Yeah.
So.
We were ready to call out. Nah, it doesn't make any sense. Oh, wait. All right. It makes sense. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. But it was a cool moment. So.
It was a cool moment. There were pockets of really clever ideas. The clown in the distance that came running at the camera, that was probably the freakiest part of the whole thing. Very, very unsettling. What did you think, Aaron?
This is one of those movies where I do believe that there are very good ideas at play. There were several of the vignettes where I actually really thought it was a cool idea. It was very clever. It was the hitchhiker in the car being picked up by two girls. That vignette. I don't want to spoil it. Unlike Scott, who just gave away like major plot points. But that one was very clever. The people at the house, I really liked that one. But the execution was lacking in several aspects, where I felt like this could have been built up to be something a lot stronger. It could have been expanded on but I did think there were a lot of clever ideas. Like, I really liked many of the ideas that were at play, and I commented throughout that this is a really clever idea. This is a really smart idea. I just think the execution, and it could be restricted by budget. I mean, this is a very independent film. I get that. That's where it was lacking in execution. John, what about you?
I'm more or less in the same boat as you guys. There were a few instances where the production kind of drove me a little nuts. Like the one with the night vision goggles. When I saw it, because I saw it a couple months earlier, I could barely make out what was happening in the scene. Because it looked like it had the resolution of a potato on the screen, and like a 480 resolution image, but I'm showing it on a 1080p image, and it's just not working. Yeah.
That's true.
And so there were some production issues that I understand it's low budget. I think that's one of the pitfalls of getting into this whole genre of doing found footage, is that some people look at it and say, hey, it's a great way for us to break into the movies and it's be super easy because we can use what we have. But there's a lot more to it than they realize, or there's a lot more fine tuning or craftsmanship that goes into it than some of the people who made these vignettes for them were able to put into it. But again, great solid ideas with the hitchhikers, great idea with the one in the house. There are some solid things working for this. I think one of my only major criticisms were as much like Scott's favorite moment. Those moments were a little too long for me.
Mm-hmm.
I think you guys have kind of acknowledged pretty much everything, in that there are some really great ideas at play here, even though, and I should preface this all by saying I'm not crazy about found footage. So going into this was already like,
and you're probably mad because your name wasn't mentioned.
No, I really don't care. who knows? Would it have been spelled correctly? I don't know. That was one of my gripes. That was one of the things that bothered me the most.
Some of the subtitles.
There wasn't like spell check, and I could be just really anal about this, but it was like, I don't know, when you say, where are we going? It shouldn't say, or yeah, it shouldn't say we're. I don't know, just like those mix-ups or whatever. That was more frustrating to me than anything else, which I know sounds super crazy. But with that being said, for somebody who doesn't really enjoy found footage movies, there's only like two that I can count on that I enjoyed. There was some really good ideas here. And for not really having a budget, like you guys have mentioned, it was executed as well as I could have expected. The acting you guys mentioned, I pretty much believed everybody. The only one I didn't was at the very end. And I think that ending was really what hurt the movie the most.
Yeah, I actually really thought it ended well, and then it didn't end.
Right. And that, and unfortunately, the actress who closed it was not one of the strongest of the film. And so that kind of hurt the ending a little bit more, too.
I get that.
I really feel like, and I'll try my best not to spoil it this time, Aaron, that there's a certain moment at the end that I feel like if it had ended right there, it would have been a much stronger ending than what we got.
Yeah.
I think you know what I'm talking about?
Yep. We're all
there. There was a specific line and it just ended there. I would have really actually appreciated it much more. I really wish Jack were here actually, because I'd like to ask him to come back to your issue with the subtitles. Amanda?
Yes.
Because we noticed some errors. I want to know if that was intentional or if it was just kind of glossed over. Because some of the ones that bothered us, I think, are actually a lost in translation situation.
European translation?
For some of them, for sure.
Right.
You know?
Some actually had some words missing. And I'm like you. I teach writing and reading, so I'm a little bit more anal than some people. But there's one, like, they spelled the word wow, W-A-U-W. Which I know is how they do spell it in Europe.
Don't they have that subtitled on video games that way?
Certain ones, yes.
Yeah, because I feel
probably
like
how he knows it.
Luigi or something, is he the one who would always say, wow, 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 whenever he jumped?
No, that's Owen Wilson.
All right, well, that's good. That's Paranoia Tapes 2. We're going to move on. Scott, you're welcome to join us or bail. It's up to you.
I'll stick around if you guys want.
Yeah, it's up to you.
You can wing it.
All right, now let's go to new releases real quick, and then we're going to get to our From the Outset In topic. Donnybrook. What's Donnybrook, John?
Donnybrook is two men prepared to compete in a legendary bare-knuckle fighting competition where the fighter gets a $100,000 prize. This is directed by Tim Sutton, stars Jamie Bell and Frank Grillo.
Yeah.
Oh, Aaron's in.
I'm in. And the only other release of note this week, other than Fighting With My Family, which is expanding, is How to Train Your Dragon, The Hidden World. There's a written review on the website, thehollywoodoutsider.com. But we also have a real review from Troy Heinrich. So here's that. Okay, I am joined by my co-host for the Blacklist Exposed podcast that I do, Troy Heinrich.
TV with Troy. Only this time we're not talking TV.
No, this time we're talking about a movie, because you got to see How to Train Your Dragon, The Hidden World early. So before we get into what you thought of it, here's a brief synopsis. When Hiccup discovers Toothless isn't the only Night Fury, he must seek the Hidden World, a secret dragon utopia, before a hired tyrant named Grimmel finds it first. So, Troy, you saw this. You are a fan of the series. The voice actors are Jay Baruchel, America Ferrera, F. Murray Abraham, and this was directed by Dean DuBois, something like that. How do you feel about the How to Train Your Dragon series? Because I'll be honest with you, I have never seen these movies. I haven't.
And you should be ashamed of yourself for that.
I've heard that a lot, actually.
The Train Your Dragon series, I think, is the... I know everybody loved it because it's from DreamWorks. So a lot of people love Shrek and everything that Shrek did over its course of its four movies. Granted, it might have been a little bit long in the tooth at some point when Shrek was finally completed. But I think they've done a really great job with the How to Train Your Dragon series and getting people excited about, you know, Norse culture and the Vikings and dragons and how this all comes to be. And I think it also has a really great message around how we can interact with not only each other and what we expect people to do in their lives. In the first movie specifically, you have Hiccup, who's underneath the chief, and the chief is expecting him to be certain things and demanding him to be certain things. And he does not want to be any of those things. So it's kind of forging your own path and what you want to do with your life. So there's some really great messages for the kids and families to talk about through the course of these three films. The second movie was just gorgeously stunning, and the story behind it and what happens is phenomenal. But this third movie, it wasn't the greatest, I think, storyline throughout the course of the movie. It was kind of predictable, repetitive, and a lot of things that you've seen every now and then throughout other movies where you can say, okay, I know where this is going to go at some point. But oh my gosh, the just the visuals that you get for an animated film today are just amazingly stunning when they finally do get to the hidden world and you go through the flying sequences down there and you see all the dragons down there and just the collectiveness of it all. It was just spectacular that you just are in awe that you're watching this on a big screen. Mm-hmm. But if this is the end of this, it was a really great ending.
So do you feel like it gives you closure? It gives you a sense of closure for the series itself?
For the Hiccup and his dragon Toothless, for that storyline, it definitely gives it a nice wrap-up button bow on the end. But it does leave open the ability for future conversations of what might happen to the Vikings and the dragons in the future. So it leaves it open that they could make more movies. I don't think they're going to make more Hiccup Toothless movies.
So just like spinoffs or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. You whether it's, you know, Hiccup's kids or Toothless's kids or whatever it ends up being in the end. Yeah, there could be all kinds of stories. They could go back and talk about any of the other. Well, they kind of did with the Riders of Berk. There's a TV series on Netflix that they put off. So you can still tell all kinds of stories about Sneaglepuss and Longfoot. And I can't remember all of their names. They're just so ridiculous. But all of Hiccup's friends that he worked with over the course of the three movies, they all could have stories of their own and branch out. They could go find their own islands and start up their own Viking societies, and maybe they end up warring against, I don't know. But there's definitely possibility of story that could happen coming out of this franchise. But for Hiccup and Toothless, it's a really good ending. I've heard people say that it's like Toy Story 3 from the emotional perspective. I don't know if it was quite that to me, because I really, really love Toy Story 3, and I'm kind of bitter about Toy Story 4 coming out because of
so
it.
So am I. Don't ruin a perfect ending.
Yeah, but it was good. My daughter was a puddle on the floor.
Oh, well, that should be the real judge, right? And this is really meant to be a family movie, a kid's movie. It's not really meant to be, you know, a lot of times Pixar movies are, they almost feel more adult in nature.
Sure.
This seems like more of a series where it's geared toward the entire family, but specifically more toward kids. Would you agree with that or don't agree?
Yeah,
with that?
I would say it had more of a kid flair to it. It was more the funny, stupid jokes. There's some really great joke sequences throughout the course of the movie where I chuckled at one or two, but my daughter was cracking up every 10 minutes. So it's definitely more probably a level down from that regard. You're not going to get the intellectual stimulation from, say, a Pixar movie would be in this case, especially for this third one. I think that's more the case in the first one. In the first How to Train Your Dragon, it was probably more at that intellectual Pixar level. But this one is definitely geared for, these are kids who are now probably in their teens, maybe early 20s, that have grown up with the dragons through their whole childhood. So to have them feel that emotional button at the end, it was just, yeah, super powerful.
All right. If $10 is the full price of admission, what do you give How to Train Your Dragon, The Hidden World?
Yeah, $7.50 seems about right. I mean, the story was a little bit predictable, but the production value, the voice acting, the jokes, all of that makes it work. And of course, Toothless is just so damn cute.
And you can read Troy's full review on the site. So thanks for coming by. And remember to check out his podcast, The Blacklist Exposed, at theblacklistexposed.com.
Our podcast.
Yeah, but see, you're joining me as a guest, so I'm saying yours. And I think you can kick me off at any point, so technically.
It would be a really boring podcast if I did, but thanks anyway for letting me write the review.
It's kind of like how John and Amanda, you know, it's our podcast, but if I don't like you, I'm just kidding.
Cut you in your sleep.
All right, thanks, Troy.
All right, we'll see you, man.
Okay, don't forget to visit our website at thehollywoodoutsider.com, join our Facebook group, thehollywoodoutsider.com, or follow us on Twitter at @buypopcorn and subscribe to our Android app. We're on Spotify, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, review us on Apple Podcasts if you would, or whatever app you currently use, you can subscribe. Now it's time for From the Outside In topic. Building the perfect found footage film. We're going to get there. As we mentioned earlier, certain tiers of Patreon include certain perks, and one of them is to pick a topic and guest on a show. Well, Patreon supporter Jack Saint meant to be on for this episode, but he couldn't make it. But he did choose the topic, found footage. Specifically, what works, what doesn't, and what is our perfect found footage movie? And to give you kind of a background on this, found footage is a subgenre in which all or a substantial part of the film is presented as if it were discovered film or video recordings. The events on screen are typically seen through the camera of one or more of the characters involved, a lot of times accompanied by the real-time off-camera commentary. The footage may be presented as if it were raw or complete, or as if it had been edited into a narrative by those who, quote unquote, found it. Okay, while it wasn't the first, the Blair Witch Project is the movie that truly launched found footage into the stratosphere, as many people believe that these, quote unquote, tapes were real. I knew a lot of people that thought they were real. They would argue all day they were real. They were wrong.
I thought they were.
Yeah, see?
I'll admit it.
The actors and actresses were on, like, today, Good Morning America and today, the Today Show. It was real. No, wait. How is it real? She's not dead.
That's how I found out.
Yeah, that came later, though. They didn't do that until after the movie became a huge juggernaut. And these kids never really disappeared in the woods, but a lot of people felt that way. Other films like Paranormal Activity and Cloverfield took the genre to different heights and went different ways with the option of found footage. And countless others proved that it was the cheapest possible option to make a movie. Like any genre, found footage is stacked with pluses and minuses. So why do you think this is such an innovative way to tell a story? Scott, you're still our guest. So what do you think that found footage is such an innovative way?
For me, what I liked about it is it felt more real, because even as a young kid, like when Blair Witch came out and later when Paranormal Activity came out, I had watched so many movies, and you sit down and you watch a film and it feels like, okay, I'm watching a movie. I'm watching a completely scripted out event. The lines are memorized. You know, the music cues are there. You just know you're watching a movie. And for the first time that I can remember, I felt like I was just watching somebody's home video that actually also told a compelling story at the same time. So that idea was very cool. And also the paranormal aspect of it, because, you know, the Blair Witch or these ghosts that are haunting these people. It's that creepy world of unknown that we don't get. It's why we watch those shows like the Ghost Hunters or whatever, the one where people actually go and try to investigate haunted houses and things like that. That's always fun. Even though I don't believe it, it's still fun to see things happen, even if it's fabricated. It gives me that thrill, because even though I don't believe it, I kind of wish it did exist or they were real, so I can live that way by watching these movies. And with it being a found footage, it feels more real, even though it's still just as scripted, just as fabricated as a normal film. Being in the hands of an actor doing it makes it feel more believable to me in some respects.
Yeah, I buy that. It's just like saying the barrier of entry on multiple levels is so much lower than your normal Hollywood Thunderdome of a movie. The cost of making it so much lower, the amount of work you have to do to get your viewer to buy into it necessarily isn't as hard as a normal movie. I get that.
It's a good and cheap, easy way to confuse your audience and trick them into questioning whether something's real or not. It causes you to go into disbelief. Even if you realize this is not real, the fact that there's some sort of plausible reaction and the realistic footage can kind of grab your attention and allow you to place yourself in that position in a way that regular movies can't necessarily do, as they have to work a lot harder to do it, I think.
I look at it in the respect that we can all make movies ourselves like this. We can take videos. We all have footage. We've all done Facebook videos or family videos or something like that. So whenever I see a found footage, I absolutely feel like that could be real. That 100% could be real. I see a movie, I see a movie.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see a truly real scenario. Found footage is the exception. When done well, can really, really just take you completely out of the quote unquote movie aspect of it and put you into the scenario. It's honestly one of the most immersive forms of storytelling when done well.
Yeah, like for me, Paranormal Activity did it. I thought that was real. I went home that night.
Man, that chick gets dragged out of that bed. I'm like, where's the ghost?
I didn't close the bathroom to pee for days. I would, because I was so afraid I would get locked in the bathroom and something bad would happen to me. And then
why would they lock you in the bathroom?
I don't know. What if they want to kill me and they don't want me to open the door and I'm like trying to open the door and I can't open the door?
They're going to get you wherever you go.
What if they actually existed?
Well, that's what I was worried about. Like, I don't know. Obviously, I can't see them.
Yeah, you can't prove they don't, Scott.
Yeah. So anyway, I had a hard time.
Don't get me started.
Yeah.
Well, and
I'm not a ghost fan.
To be fair, I went to a midnight showing of that, and everybody was freaking out. And normally, I don't get scared.
Those are great movies. They really are.
But man.
Let me ask you guys a question. Would you consider those movies to be found footage, the ones where it's somebody on their laptop and they're using instant message and whatever? Would you consider that found footage? Because I really like that concept, too.
Yeah.
Like searching?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Open Windows was another one with Elijah Wood.
Oh, yeah.
I enjoyed that one.
What was the face? Dark Web. That was really Unfriended.
Unfriended, yeah. I actually really liked the second one till the ending.
Yeah, the ending just ruined everything. Mm-hmm. All right, so let's dole out the pluses and minuses. First, the pluses. What do you like about found footage movies? We kind of talked about it, but what really stands out to you is I like that about it.
Yeah, I like the innovative techniques that you can use or the really clever storytelling. I think you have to work a little bit harder to make that believable. And I give a ton of credit, like I already said, to Paranormal Activity because they made it found footage without all of the shaky cam. Everything didn't have to be somebody's holding this camera. They utilized... Sometimes people were recording themselves on a laptop, or it was primarily going to be the little cameras that they had in the corners of the house. And I thought that was really unique. And so people have to experiment and be very creative in ways that you're normally not having to push yourself to do.
Hmm. The thing about found footage movies that really sticks out for me as a plus is I feel like no other genre of film makes me sit and stare at the screen and scour every inch of the screen to look for that one thing that the filmmaker wants me to see, that little thing in the corner or a ghostly image that comes across. I just sit there and just look at every single frame to try to find any little thing that's going to give me some clue as to what's going on or where something is going to jump out at me. That makes it just a thrill to watch.
Do you remember when we went and saw, I don't remember which Paranormal Activity it was, 3 or 4, one of those. I've seen several of those with Scott. And it's the one with the Xbox Kinect. Mm-hmm. And they had all the dots throughout the room. And Scott and I were just like glued to the screen trying to figure out when the dots were moving and when they weren't moving and when was something in there. And it was just, I agree with 100% with what you just said. That is why I love those movies, because you cannot take your eyes off the screen for anything. You can't go get popcorn. You can't pee. You're going to miss something huge if you do.
The one that got me the most was, I think it was Paranormal Activity 3, the scene when you've got the camera set up in the bedroom and the mom and dad go to check on the girls because like there's an earthquake or something. And they leave the room and you see the dust fall from the ceiling and the dust falls over the outline of a creature. And it just like, you're like, something's there. And then that creature just shakes the dust off of him. Like that whole scene freaked me out to the point where I had to, like, I was watching that in the bedroom while my wife was watching the Olympics with a couple of friends in the living room. And I was just like, I can't. Oh my God. I'm going back in.
For me to kind of compound on that, the scene was, and again, I can't remember which one, but where he mounted the camera on a oscillating fan and it was going left and right. So every time it came back to the spot that you wanted to see, you could not wait to see what was there. It would go away. You're like, no, I want to go back and see it. And then you come back and something different would be there. It was a brilliant way to make found footage a little bit different that I adored.
Isn't that the same one where all of the pots and pans fall from the ceiling?
I think that's the second one.
Oh, is it?
I think so.
Yeah. Okay.
That was a great scare too.
Yeah,
that's
it was.
The great thing about found footage is that there's no one single thing that kind of works, but all of it put together, like, you know, found footage when you're watching it, because like we're talking about Paranormal Activity and that's a good big, that's a big one because there were so many of those movies, but there's also Afflicted, which was a fantastic found footage movie about these two dudes that are running through, Europe, and they're doing different stunts and stuff, and their explanation as to why they have the cameras on all the time is because they're body cameras for the stunts that they're doing, and it's a vampire story on top of it, and the way they executed that whole thing, it's really interesting, really fun, and it all makes sense, kind of vampire found footage movie, and it was different from everything else we've talked about.
And Chronicle was a great one.
I like that one too.
Yeah, I mean that was taking... You're doing superhero movies with found footage. Who knew you could do that? I've seen a lot of clever ideas that have been utilized for this.
And that one was one of the better looking ones, too.
Yeah, it did. It looked really well. Really good.
The effects were really great towards the end. I liked it a lot.
Now, let's get to the funnier part, or the part that drives everybody crazy. What do you loathe? And how would you improve that aspect? What don't you like about found footage? And how would you improve it?
I don't like how everyone thinks they can do it. It's not fair to say, because the whole idea is supposed to be like an easier way for everyone to get into it, but it's so saturated and there's so much going on that like I said, the barrier of entry is so low on the genre that you got so many things that feel haphazard, or they feel like they're a poor sketch of what a good found footage movie is, or a poor copy of it, just so that they can get into the genre, do something, and hopefully it catches on. But they're missing some of the finer points of the craftsmanship that they don't realize is actually happening.
Or it's not cut correctly, and some of the scenes just wind up being too long and unnecessary. You're having conversations that really seem to have nothing to do with what's going on, and you're just like, get me back to what I came here to see in this movie, and that's the scares.
I hate shaky cam.
That too.
I hate it.
That was the obvious one.
It's so awful. And I feel like it's just the easy way out because somebody wants to rely on what Blair Witch Project did. Like, they made a big boom. Not to say that there weren't found footage films that did that before, but they're the ones who really kind of brought it out, as we mentioned before. And it just drives me nuts that people in this genre, and this very well could be why I have a hard time with these movies, people in this genre often don't take the creative steps that other films in the genre have taken, but they're so seldomly done and executed well that they're like, well, this is easy. This is an easy way for me to make a movie. This is an easy way for me to try to get on the market. And that bothers me. If you're going to make a movie, do it because you have a really creative idea or something that you want, a message you want to get across, not because you think it's easy or that you can do it without a budget. Now, that's great if you just want to experiment and you're just trying to like figure out what works for you and how to make a movie. But I'm sorry, low budget found footage movies don't often look that great, and they're not that appealing to me. And I'm just like, great, somebody made this in their backyard and threw leaves in the air. Fantastic.
And shook their camera really, really right. hard. Like, or they were having a seizure.
Or they zoomed in really tight on something and the camera operator isn't wearing a rig to smooth out the image.
Yeah, there's just so many things that drive me nuts with this. And I think lack of creativity is one of them, especially because you have such an opportunity to be creative
with this genre.
Pretty much anything, exactly. And you have so many different ways to do it. I'm sorry, in this current climate, this society, you have an iPhone that can take amazing photos and videos. Mm-hmm. People make movies on iPhones all the time.
Steven Soderbergh is making a whole career off of it.
Seriously. Go buy an iPhone and make a good looking found footage film that has like real story or content to it, and not just like some weird concoction of people running around in the woods. Like, that shit drives
shaking,
me nuts.
Shaking it.
What are we going to do today? Well, you're going to run and you're going to shake your camera, Bob. What else are you going to do? Like, that's not...
It's more intense when you're running and it's shaking even more. It's like when those low-budget filmmakers would make scenes where it's supposed to be an earthquake, but you know nobody's actually moving. It's just the camera.
They don't do the Star Trek thing where they rock back and forth in their chairs.
What's going on? My biggest pet peeve, this drives me, and I'm sure it drives everybody nuts, most of the time. I am at the point where it used to be too often. Now it's at the point where it's most of the time. The camera doesn't belong wherever the hell it is. Wherever the hell, whatever is taking the picture makes no sense why they are holding the camera there, and especially while they're still holding it. Once you see somebody ripped out of a bed by a ghost, you're done. You put the camera down. If you're in the middle of the woods and somebody's chasing you, don't give me that, well, it's got a flashlight on it. Man, you're in the middle of the woods in the dark. You would have a flashlight. It makes no sense for you to have, all I got is this giant VHS camera with this shiny light.
Adding 10 pounds to my run.
Right? It's the only way I can get around in the woods.
Man. We live in a world of Instagram where people have to selfie with everything. So the idea that somebody is more concerned with getting something to post on their Facebook page or whatever more than their personal safety, I can kind of buy that a little bit.
They're not going to do that with a recorder. They're going to do that with their phone. See,
it when they do it with their phone.
If they're like on Facebook Live, that would be wild.
No, but if they're in the woods and they're using their phone as a flashlight because they're too stupid to bring a regular flashlight, okay, I'll buy that because that reminds me of people. But when you have that giant rig and it's always a VHS one because, hey, we found these VHS tapes. Nobody's going to be doing that. Nobody in any, or maybe in 1986 when they didn't know any better. But in this day and age, if you've seen any found footage movies, which believe me, have been out for everybody else to watch, you wouldn't be, you know what? Let's go out in the woods. Let's find this ghost. Oh, by the way, let's not bring any flashlights or any reasonable lighting. Okay. Sounds like a great idea.
But we'll bring the giant camera.
There was an alien abduction one that came out, I believe it was last year or the year before, where the guy had taken apart his camera phone because he lost his eye, and he turned his prosthetic eye into the camera. And that's what we're watching the movie through the entire time.
That's a little wild.
That's kind of clever.
That is creative.
But he just rigged it on the spot, like
the whole idea was he wanted to capture this weekend with his friends that he hadn't seen in a while. So he was like, well, what better way of doing it than doing it from my prosthetic eye? And it made sense. It's like the story, like the movie didn't have a great it was an okay execution, but that one idea was actually pretty ingenious as to how they did it.
Was the entire movie point of view shots then? Like it was just straight from his eyeballs? Because that might drive me nuts.
They switched it back and forth. Okay, good. Of the movie was from his eyeball. But then other parts of the movies was from other people's iPhones. So like the whole time, if it was a person with a phone and they needed a flashlight or something, that's what we're seeing.
My problem with that is that if you have a camera in your eyeball, you don't really realize how much your eyes dart around when you're looking at things, especially when you're freaked out.
Prosthetic eyes, I don't think, move that much.
Ooh.
What about, does the battery die?
Do you get one of those crappy ones that you get with like your scale in the bathroom, those really tiny ones, and then you got to go to find a Walgreens so you can find the exact right one to replace the battery? It feels very complicated.
I need that to be in the movie. Or like Bluetooth, how he charges it. Like, does he take it out at night and he just sets it on the table?
He finds a C connector and he plugs it in the back of his ear.
Hey, anybody got a charger? He's like at a party.
Yeah, I would watch that. All right. Any other things you don't like in these movies?
I don't like when it's super obvious they are making a found footage film. Kind of like breaking the fourth wall sort of thing.
Oh, where they're talking to the camera and saying, we're out like here they because...
Know, like, they know somebody is going to... I guess I understand if they're trying to document it for a specific purpose, but most of the time they're just like, we're just going to keep talking to this camera, like, directly to the camera.
We thought we would just hang out and film everything we do this weekend.
And they point it at their face. They're like, I don't know, man. It's weird.
I do catch them once in a while. Because normally they talk to the person over their shoulder. So in the what you're seeing is them looking off to the left or right a little bit. But every once in a while, the actor will talk to the camera. And you're like, what are you doing?
Exactly.
Who talks to a camera? Unless you're like talking to an audience.
Narcissists.
Yeah.
I wonder if this can see me because I'm going to watch it later and check myself
Ew,
out.
Ew, you're weird.
All right, so now we're going to save found footage. This is where, and Scott's abstained because, you know, he didn't know about it until the last minute. So we are going to save found footage. You have to craft a story for a found footage project. This is your time to make your pitch. Now, Scott, you can be the judge. So basically, you're going to hear
your story. I do have one.
Oh, do you have one?
How did you just have one at the red? He was like hoping that we would be like, do you want to stick around?
I hope somebody.
Hey, Scott, you want to hang out? He's like, yes, please, please, please.
Just in case. No. I actually posted on your Facebook page an idea I had.
Then so go for it. Go for it.
I can go ahead and share it. You want me to go first?
Yeah, you go first. You're the guest.
Well, I'm kind of afraid I might steal John's idea. So.
Okay, well, we can go last.
I think you'll be all right. Go ahead and go first.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure you didn't steal my idea.
Okay.
Maybe you stole Scott's idea.
Is it a box of flies?
No, there's no box of flies in my idea.
Well, what is it?
Well, no, he's going to wait.
Okay. I'm sorry. All right. So my idea is one that I thought was kind of interesting, and I'm surprised that John didn't come up with this, is I want to use drone technology because, number one, that would solve the issue of the shaky cam because, as I've seen from John, who uses drones for sport, the cameras that are mounted on there are very steady, mm-hmm. very steady. So in my idea, there are people that are going out, they're out in the woods, and one of them has a drone. The guy that operates the drone gets injured before they start doing anything, and he can't go out hiking with the rest of the group, and they decide to go anyway. He's like, no, I'll stay here at the cabin. I'm going to control this drone and kind of go with you guys and do this trek with you for whatever they're going to do. So the movie is shot from the perspective of this drone as they follow them along. Hmm. I think that would be kind of cool and do in a way to kind of twist the technology a little bit and make it kind of cool. You could even do something where he is able to interact and do things. John, do they have anything on drones where you can pick up things or?
I'm sure that you can sort of rig it whatever you want them to do depending on the drone. Like the ones I fly, no, but if you can take a Phantom or a Mavic and probably come up with something that you can make more interactive, I'm sure that would work. And that's actually a fun idea, I think.
There's a movie that used drones in the film for found footage. Was it the Blair Witch remake one?
I think Blair Witch,
reboot or whatever.
Sequel, okay. Maybe, whatever it is.
Whatever it was.
I thought I had a fresh idea.
No, it was very limited.
It was so minimal. That kind of made me like really interested in what you were talking about because I was like, oh, you know what? I have seen that barely executed and it was pretty cool and it does alleviate my problem with the shaky cam.
And you could even incorporate the computer style ones we were talking about where the guy who is operating the camera and the drone, his picture in picture is in the bottom right hand corner. So he's actually, he can actually talk to the people as well.
Ooh,
he can actually come up to them kind of like a sci-fi movie, bring the camera up to them and have a conversation with them at the same time. So I think you could go a lot of different routes with that. And I can't decide if I would want to go paranormal route or serial killer route or something like that. But I like the idea of it being a drone.
Yeah, no, you can do some really cool stuff. And thinking about what I know is possible with some of the cinematography techniques with drone pilots that they are doing today, you can actually do a found footage movie for relatively cheap with some highly, highly well shot cinematography, and it's all done on the super cheap stuff that these guys have in their backpacks. They can do this with. There's a drone called the Cinewhoop, which is a smaller drone that can, it's not designed to go fast. It's not designed to do anything, but small and powerful enough to carry a GoPro Hero 7. And you can do some really beautiful stuff within tight spaces with that.
Giant overhead landscapes where people are, you know, people make money doing it. They take pictures of properties and stuff.
Yep.
But imagine, because you never see the killer chasing somebody and see it all. You'll either see it from the killer's perspective or from the victim's perspective. But imagine if you're way overhead, even without any sound, you're just seeing a killer chasing three people through the woods from an aerial view.
That would be cool.
That would be kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
I'd watch that.
I'm on board.
All right, John. So what is your idea? Now, Scott, you can be the judge if any of these ideas should be movies. You go ahead.
Well, that first one was fantastic.
All right. So I really appreciate Scott for going first on this because I feel like I've come prepared properly to do this. So my idea is we're working on a competition show for television. So it's either like a Great British Bake Off or a Face Off kind of thing. So not something where there's an actual audience watching the show, but more so still a competition show where things are happening and you have eliminations and all that other stuff. The people we are actually following are the B camera group, the guys who get a lot of the behind the scenes stuff. They're getting stuff for prosperity's sake or to be able to turn into something else. And these guys are using a normal high end steady cam to produce this, but we're seeing it more as like just more happenstance where they're catching the stuff they're supposed to be catching, but you're also getting like conversations that are happening in the background as this show is happening. We are on the penultimate episode, so not necessarily the final episode where we get a winner, but we've already had several eliminations and we are to, let's say there's four contestants, but some of the stories people are talking about is like how, like people have been trying to get a hold of the other contestants who left the show to get them ready for the ultimate episode, but no one's been able to reach them. So there's a lot of discussion, a lot of people worried about this. And then as the story is progressing, this group ends up accidentally catching like crew members starting to die and starting to fall off. And the story progresses from there and it's more of a slasher flick from that point on.
And how does the found footage get incorporated?
Well, it's more so instead of it being done as like a steady, like a phone or someone's got a store-bought camera. It's more so like this production company. It's their footage from this production they're watching the day unfold.
Like a Big Brother kind of thing.
So yeah.
Okay.
We can have some good technology while we watch this movie unfold. I like it.
The camera stays still.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I was going to say it also alleviates shaky cam because they're going to have high quality cameras and mounts. So I like it.
All right. It's my turn. All right. So here is here's a connection. If you listen to my other podcast, Smirk, this is called universe building, people, because this is connected to my Smirk episode. I am plugging it. Scott, I think you listened to it, so you're going to be the only person here besides Amanda that understands.
What's the name of that podcast?
That would be Smirk. It's available at smirkpodcast.com. All right.
Oh, okay.
What's the name of that joke?
Shut up. All right. Here's how it goes. Ready? This is its own story. I'm just saying it connects to a larger universe. My movie will begin with a decimated world. The infected have already won. Humans are just trying to survive. I'm sure we can all picture this scenario, right? We've all seen it. This portion of the movie is actually shot traditionally. Our heroes are Lexi and Rob. They have finally arrived at the Chicago Lakeshore Hospital. It's an abandoned hospital now, but they have been tracking historical data, and it conveniently led all the way back to here. This is where it all started. The first known case of the disease that turned half the population into crazed lunatic cannibals. Their need for flesh is inconsolable, right? Don't laugh at me, Amanda. Don't do it.
I'm just thinking about the zombie poop.
They search the hospital records and find out the reported case happened on floor 9. Once they get there, they immediately find the security office, as each floor has its own. Upon searching, they notice that the camera is cut right out just as the outbreak began. But there is footage all the way up to that moment. So they start at the beginning of that particular reel. Wait, when I say reel, I'm old. That particular set of recordings, which is 1 week before the outbreak. So from here, we watch security footage as a new patient arrives who is identified as Nikki. She's a young woman, but obviously a bit off her rocker. This is a psych ward. It turns out that Nikki is a schizophrenic. The footage follows Nikki and other patients as they participate in group. We learn about them through their sessions, everything we can see and hear through the cameras, and they're placed throughout the entire hall. As we are watching in a linear fashion, the video is catching up to the outbreak. Does it make sense so far?
Yes.
We're watching the outbreak unfold.
There you go.
Roger that.
Okay, so the cameras are in every room on the floor, including the bedrooms. As Lexi and Rob forward through the footage, they notice a flash of something. Rewinding that and playing it again, they see someone in the dark with a needle injecting Nikki. The shadow exits and no footage shows their face. Lexi and Rob continue to watch the footage, and it shows Nikki the next day, seemingly normal, for the entire day. She's seemingly cured. She just has never seemed this good since she's been in the floor. Then at night, the shadow arrives again, once again with a needle. The next morning, Nikki wakes up, and the footage shows her pacing back and forth, nervously. A nurse walks in, and Nikki violently attacks her, biting her cheeks all the way through. Nikki is taken to a padded room. The nurse heads home. The next day, the security camera picks up the TV in the patient lounge. That nurse murdered her entire family and attacked 3 other people as she fled the scene, biting them all. You still with me?
Yep.
I am.
All right. The rest of the footage shows Lexi and Rob an escalating series of events where the TV reports show what's happening throughout the city as cases like Nikki spread. So we see it through the security footage. We see the TV reports. So we know what's going on. And eventually we see the entire psych ward becoming overrun by infected human monsters, essentially. They get to the end of the tape where the onslaught of infected overrun the floor, eventually getting into the elevators and escaping. After the floor is empty, a familiar shadow returns to the floor, obviously looking for Nikki. He moves into frame and finally looks at the camera, and it's Rob. Lexi turns to him and panics. Then Rob explains that he is a geneticist working on an experimental cure for schizophrenia, and he genetically engineered several viruses to combat it, like the flu shot. But he made a mistake, and the viruses were not completely inactive. Therefore, they infected Nikki, and her body mutated the effects, amplifying her disease while her bite proved horribly contagious. Lexi found her answer as to what caused the plague, and now we know that there was no cure, and now she's stuck on that same floor with the engineer of it all, the end.
Legit.
Ooh. Starring Jenny McCarthy.
What? Why? Are you high?
Oh, I get it.
The anti-vaxxer joke.
I got it. It took me a minute, you sly dog.
Yes.
No, that was really
right
good.
There with you the whole time.
Yeah, sure you were, John.
I was.
Oh, thank you.
All right. So
I would watch that. You know what? Yeah. It's really cool about your storytelling. And I'm not going to ever plug this on the other podcast because then I feel like I'm giving you too much praise. But you have a really good way of making me visualize without giving me a ridiculous amount of detail like a novel, so I can actually see the movie acting out as I go in my head.
I need Hollywood to pay attention to that because I'm really good at ideas. Writing a whole damn script is where I have the problem. So I need just like a story room where I can just pitch ideas all day. I think I could be famous.
That's called a writer's room.
Yeah. Thank you. All right. Big words. I don't have time for big words. All right, Amanda, what is your pitch? Oh, by the way, Scott, could that be a movie?
Absolutely.
Thumbs up?
I want to watch it right now.
Sweet. All right, Amanda.
All right. So here's my idea. The movie starts with a successful young woman named Alice who's buying her first home on her own after she landed a job as a defense attorney. Go her. She lives in a super small town and has her entire life, but she was an orphan, kind of like rose through the ashes after her grandpa passed away, who was her caretaker after her parents died in a car accident. Her life is just super tragic.
Everybody's dead.
But she made herself alive. Mm-hmm. The house that she bought needs some work because it was foreclosed on, but she's pretty determined that she's going to make it what she wants it to be. She has people who are going to help her with the renovations because she's known the people in the town for so long. She's built those connections. And after breaking down one of the walls to create an open space, she finds these tapes, like cassette tapes, mm-hmm. not VHS tapes. She sets them aside and decides she's going to watch them later. Like, oh, this is interesting, but I'm, you know, trying to break this wall down, whatever. When she does go to watch them, she sees a family moving into a new neighborhood and house, this house that she just bought. The mom, we find out, is an accountant. The dad is a university professor. One of the kids is in high school, probably around 16, and the other is attending college to be a reporter, the one who's making these tapes. They don't experience any weird supernatural abnormalities. Kind of need to get that out of the way. Mm-hmm. But they themselves find a tape. A tape within a tape within a tape. It's labeled something like Family Vacation 1992 or something. And as a family, they decide they're going to pop it in and watch it. It starts with a family, but then it gets cut off because someone obviously recorded over it. And we see this person, well, we see from the camera's perspective, someone is stalking this unknown family. The tape is unfinished and they don't know what happened to the family. So the college kid decides this could be a really great opportunity to find a story and begins digging into the story, kind of like a murder mystery. Mm-hmm. As this college student goes along, they document their journey, all while our main character, the successful young woman, Alice, is following along with what she found in these tapes, which is the same thing that the reporter found. The two characters, in their own timelines, determine that the family was all murdered, but the killer was never caught, so they both continue to investigate. Alice decides with a closed case this old, she's going to use some connections and get the police file. When Alice finds a name she recognizes in the file, she looks further, and the name she recognizes is her grandfather.
Oh! I like that.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay.
I got it?
Yeah.
I'd watch. That's a nice little twist. So there's a mix of found footage and regular film making.
Yeah. So the regular filmmaking is of Alice and her getting into this new life, but then she finds all of this additional found footage.
I like it.
And she decides to kind of participate. And so you get to see the two storylines kind of go back and forth.
All right, Scott, could that be a movie? Plus?
Absolutely.
Sweet. You're so agreeable.
Incept tape.
Incept tape.
Incept tape. Nice.
That's funny. Actually sent it to Aaron earlier and because I was trying to explain it to him. And I'm like, does that make sense? Because I'm hoping it makes sense. And then I actually sent him like a little diagram and I put one box and it said murder and then a box around that box and it said family. And then I put a box around that one and it said attorney. And so it really is like
Incept tape.
Incept tape.
But I like how you just had to assume I was a frickin' moron and I couldn't figure it out.
Well, no, it was more about did I explain it well?
When in doubt, draw a picture.
That's true. That's your mantra, right? I mean, that's what you that's what you do. All right.
And where's Brian? We need him to draw a box.
That's an old throwback joke. And though Jack couldn't be here, he did send in his found footage pitch, and he like threw in some production value and stuff. So here, take a listen to Jack Saint's pitch for a found footage movie.
All right, my idea is called WWJD. It centers around the Marshall family, who is a very tight-knit Christian family with a lot of core values. Well, they have three kids, two boys and one daughter. One boy is secretly gay but doesn't tell anybody, and the daughter is a pure virgin. Well, on one night, the daughter, we're going to call her Susie, she goes out and she has a good time with a date. Everything is going good until the very end. Well, at the very end of the date, outside, sitting outside her house, around 7 o'clock or 8 o'clock, depending on the time that, you know, they gave her to be back, the guy forces her to engage in some sexual activity that she is not wanting. She's a virgin, so she's kind of scared about all that stuff. Well, she ends up biting the hell out of him. I'm not going to tell you where. You can pretty much guess where she bites him, because she doesn't want to do this act on him. You know, she is literally the sweetest girl and doesn't want to lose her virginity to someone like him. Well, she goes back in crying, all upset, everything just going, you know, she's just pissed off and sad and heartbroken. And her dad goes downstairs and asks, "What's wrong, honey?" And she tells him what happened, and she's like, "Oh, okay." Then we see from the point of view of a different person with a GoPro that is on their on they have a camera on their chest, and they go to Stanley's house. Stanley is the boyfriend of the little girl, or the guy that, you know, did all this stuff to her. And we see the person putting on duct tape over Stanley's mouth while they're in a house and tying his feet and stuff to the end of the beds, and the person starts stabbing them repeatedly. They take off their hood, but we don't see who the killer actually is. The next morning, one of the kids has a camera, and they go downstairs, and they see that the cops are interviewing the parents about what's going on, because their daughter was the last one to be seen with them, and they don't give them permission because, you know, they're trying to protect their daughter. So next thing you know, it cuts to them being at the dinner table again for breakfast with the little girl and the two boys. And the parents go on to tell the little girl about, you know, we have to stay tight-knit as a family and we have to stay together. It is then revealed that they own a security company and they know all the codes to get into these houses. And then we also find out that the mother is the one that went to kill the little girl's date because of what he did to their daughter. And then the daughter reveals that she's adopted, and she's adopted to be a part of their family and one of them. And then the movie, or the short, fades to black, and that is the end.
All right, now we go to some listener comments. We did ask our listeners on the Facebook group what needs to be done to reinvigorate the found footage genre. Rob Rowald said it needs to go away for a while. It's been so overplayed and most times very poorly that it needs to be shelved for a while and given a rest. I mean,
I want more.
Not necessarily wrong.
I don't. I want either you give me
get creative, and anything can be reborn with creativity.
Just I'm okay with it being put on the shelves for a little while.
Michael Weinrich said, "Less shaky cam. I understand that it's supposed to be us watching when someone recorded themselves, but I just can't take watching someone running with a camera for more than 5 minutes." Agreed.
Also, in this generation, who doesn't know how to hold a camera steady anymore? That's all people do on their phones.
Well,
anymore.
If you're running.
The problem is that they don't know how to hold a camera steady. It's that they decide to not look at their phone anymore and see it with their own eyes instead of through the lens of the camera. And I don't know if you've ever watched somebody like try to film a tornado or or film anything in weather. They stop looking at the phone to make sure they've got a good shot, and then it drifts, and then it drifts, and it goes down. And that is a real thing.
And then you get shit production value. So nice job, people.
Kyle Nolan said, "More creative use of various video sources to tell a story. Searching was sort of a more modern take on the genre, and it was quite unique and entertaining." Yeah, I would say it's definitely like top 30 of the movies last year. I thought it was a great movie.
I still need to see that one.
You would dig it. It's really clever.
Yeah.
Two more. Jennifer Maloney. I don't think it was ever invigorated in the first place. It was a gimmick that's played out. People don't like watching shaky cam.
Well, at least we have a consensus on the shaky cam.
I don't think it's played out, though. I mean, so many people love those movies. It really just takes one to click with audiences again.
Well, yeah, I was going to say earlier that I was actually surprised that we didn't get as way more than we actually did when it was hot.
I would argue that this is more like a cult genre where people, there is like a specific group that cling to this idea and heavily cling to it. But it's not like the box office is like, well, I mean, I guess Paranormal Activity. So there is sometimes.
And Blair Witch and Cloverfield. There's been
but
hits.
Cloverfield and Paranormal Activity don't utilize that shaky cam as much. So the ones who aren't overplaying with that, they're doing all right. It's the shaky cam, which it's like, okay, Blair Witch did it. That's great.
I'm just saying I wouldn't call it a cult genre because there have been major box office hits. And lastly, Ty Nelson, the best way you could use it now is to incorporate found footage into a traditional narrative. It's a gimmick and a niche one at that. You know, I concur with most of it. Yeah, I prefer meshing of those styles, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, that does it for our topic this week. By the way, next week is going to be our Oscar special. We're going to talk about the Oscars. Then we'll go ahead and bitch about everything that's gone wrong with the Oscars this year. And we're also going to have a movie battle royale, and old Scott Calgaro is going to come by and help
old?
Us do that.
Did
you? Well, I mean, he's not young. He knows.
But you can still submit your picks for the Oscar thing.
You better hurry up because it's done on Sunday. The Oscars are Sunday, February 24th. If you're listening to this now, go to thehollywoodoutsider.com, find the Oscar pick poll, and you can win a movie or a T-shirt.
Or just you can have us tell everyone else how great you are.
Yeah, I'm sure people care about that. We will announce the winner on next week's show, though. So any recent film or TV recommendations we haven't previously talked about? Scotty, you're still the guest. Anything that you've watched recently that you want to mention?
Let's see. I'm on my rewatch of Game of Thrones again for the 8th time in preparation for that. So I don't have anything new to say there. That show's still awesome. I did finally see Aquaman.
And?
I really liked it.
Yeah.
My wife really liked it.
Oh, I bet she did. I
mean. Yeah, I know what you mean.
But I went into it even with pretty decent expectations, and I still feel like they were surpassed. I had a lot of fun with that movie. The trench scene was great, and Momoa is just a ton of fun to watch. He was just a likable superhero that wasn't overly, you know, bubbly and let's go save the world, Cap. You know, it wasn't. He was a cool character.
Can I go back to your Game of Thrones thing, because I'm in the middle of a rewatch too. I'm in the nearing the end of season 3, which is Red Wedding Time.
Mm-hmm.
I every time I rewatch the show, I always pick up something I didn't catch the first time. Do you ever notice that?
So do I.
It's so weird, man. I've seen this show so many times, and every single time I rewatch it, there's at least a few things where I'm like, I didn't even, either I forgot about it or I never caught it to begin with.
Oh, yeah. I've got one that I'm ashamed to admit that I didn't realize.
Oh, tell us.
Can you say it, or is it a big spoiler?
No, it's not a spoiler. Okay. But there's a scene like in season 1 where what's his name? Boy. The guy that you can't stand.
Littlefinger?
The guy that turns into Reek. That's how I know him as Reek.
Oh, Theon Greyjoy.
Theon, thank you. Theon is, he's been banging a whore, and she flashes him on the turnip cart. Remember that?
Yeah.
I guess she goes away. I never realized that was Roz.
Are you kidding me?
I've seen that show 7 times, and this time around, I was like, "Oh, that's Roz that's going to the Capitol to be that, because you know she was all cleaned up by the time you saw her again." And I just never made that connection that it was the same person. I thought it was just somebody that Theon really loved and was saying goodbye to her, and we were getting a character moment.
Oh, my God, Scott.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I knew who Roz was for the rest of her existence, but I never made the connection that she was the one on the turnip cart. Right. What was yours? It can't be nearly as bad as mine.
You know, I really appreciate the fact that it took the flashing to go, oh, wait, that's Roz.
He's like, I know those drapes.
It wasn't that, it was the scene. Is what I was
uh-huh.
I
didn't even remember
sure
the scene.
Right.
Well, thank God you came in to clean up the fact that Aaron sat there and commented on drapes. It's just
my the one that got me is more not really specific. Well, no, it is specific. It's the Bolton. I don't want to say what happened because there are people that are probably going to start the show because they're hearing so much about it. And I really don't want to, like, I want people to enjoy it. But the Ross Bolton moment really does build up to it. And I thought it just came out of nowhere the first time I saw it. And watching the show again, you see how it builds to it.
Hmm.
The Bolton at the Red Wedding, that moment.
Roose Bolton?
I'm sorry. What did I say? Did I say Ross? Ross, Roose. I've heard it both ways.
We're pulling in a Friends reference there.
The Michael Bolton moment. the Bolton moment. Whatever that is, that leads to Red Wedding, I used to think it just kind of came out of nowhere and we didn't learn about it until after the fact. You actually, there's plenty of evidence supporting that moment.
Dude, I've forgotten like pretty much the entire show, aside from like the last season or the two seasons. Big moments I remember.
You might want to recap because there's a whole series finale coming.
I know, but am I really going to need to know the first like five seasons?
I am shocked how much information is in these first three seasons that ends up paying off.
I have like 4 weeks to do this.
Well, something like that.
I started in Christmas. I'm on season six.
Oh, dear God. Yeah. This just sounds awful.
Well, then don't do it. We'll see what happens.
Don't do it. But considering your own Valentine's Day canceled on you, I think you have plenty of time.
Look, the delay for the pizza was 3.5 hours. What was I going to do?
Johnny, what? Any recommendations before we can close this out?
So I already brought it up a little bit, but Umbrella Academy, I can't say enough good things about this show. If you are into comic book shows, but you're tired of comic book shows, then this is the show for you. It's just, it's interesting. It's got a nice bit of quirk to it. It's got a good bit of action to it. It has a lot of heart, and it was just put together in a fantastic way. A little bit of melodrama here and there, but wholly a interesting and new idea in the world of comic books. I really enjoyed the series, and I think people should check that out. I also got to catch the second season of The Dragon Prince on Netflix. It dropped this weekend as well. What a great cartoon. I know Aaron just tuned that out, so the rest of us can like sit there and be like, that was a great cartoon. The characters are just wonderful as far as how they put these characters together and every little bit of nuance to them. And it's almost mesmerizing to see these cartoon characters that feel more real than some of our real actors. It's really cool. Those are the things I caught up on this weekend.
I did enjoy Umbrella Academy for what I've seen as well, but I caught on Netflix, I've been watching just kind of while I'm doing something else, Friends from College.
And they got canceled, by the way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
I hope you're really enjoying it because you ain't getting no more.
Here's the thing is it's a good show for me to kind of like watch, but also you could do the dishes while you're watching it. And it makes me kind of laugh. And
the Scott method of watching with one eye.
Yeah, that. So I don't know. It's been decent. It's not like anything I'm raving about for sure, but it's kind of funny.
I have been other than the Game of Thrones. I saw Prodigy, which is a Taylor Schilling's movie where she has a son that may or may not be possessed or have the reincarnated body of a serial killer in him. That was better than I expected. That was actually not a bad movie. I really thought it looked not great. And it surprised me.
What's
that and Alita both surprised me. It's probably like $5.50. Okay. I mean, I do think it's a rental. It's not go spend a bunch of money at the theater.
Okay, good.
But I enjoyed it.
That reminds me, I also saw, I almost forgot I saw this, but the Happy Death Day 2, I saw that this weekend too.
How was it?
It's actually kind of fun, and it is a worthy successor to the original movie, which I enjoy the original movie. The weird thing they did is they took out some of the slasher aspects of it and made it more about the girl. So it's interesting, but it's fun. I really liked it.
She's great. I think she's hysterical. Jessica
she
Ross.
Is hysterical. Yeah, some of her deaths are awesome.
I am excited for that one.
All right. Well, I think that is going to do it. I do want to mention real quick that if you happen to be in the Chicago area, C2E2 is coming out, and I will be hosting panels there this year on Saturday and Sunday, one for the Blacklist, because I do the Blacklist Exposed with Troy Heinrichs. He and I will both be doing that one on Saturday. And then the Sunday, which is, I think it's the 23rd and 24th, I'll be doing the Cobra Kai panel. I can announce that finally on the main stage. So I'll be there with Ralph Macchio and Billy Zabka, and we're going to talk about Cobra Kai. And I will probably sweep somebody's leg.
Awesome.
I was just going to say, cool. The rule is you have to take a shot every time someone says sweep the leg during that panel.
Put him in a body bag!
Yeah, fans. It's going to be fun. So come check that out if you're in the Chicago area. It should be a good time. And be sure to come say hi if you get a chance. All right. Well, Scott, thanks for coming by. You can always find Scott on the Gaming Outsider. That's his podcast that he left us to go do and focus on. And I was a guest on that one this week, so you will be able to hear me talk about Crackdown 3 and how everybody should be playing that game, because it's a lot of fun. You can also find John's artwork on Insta and everywhere else at rjohn.draws, Amanda on Smirk as well as Veronica's Marshmallows, and me and my other podcasts, as I said, Smirk and the Blacklist Exposed. Remember, the next time you head to a theater, buy popcorn. Thanks Scotty.
Guys.
Yeah, thanks for hanging around.
That was awesome having you over here.
Yeah. Scott, you've gotten funnier.
What'd she say?
I said, Scott, you've gotten funnier.
I've gotten funnier?
Yeah.
Wow.
Just moving this all over the place.
You guys have really shown a light on the fact that I was not prepared for the topic with your in-depth narratives that you...
No, you did a good job. No, you did great.
I'm right there with you, pal.
I mean, I wrote mine this morning, so.
What do you mean you're right there with him? You weren't prepared, jackass?
No, I was prepared, but I didn't like come up with a script and a story and a synopsis and like beg for producers to pick up my idea. I didn't do any of that.
You mean like you were supposed to? I mean, that's kind of what was in the format, but.
Well, he writes there, stories all the time.
I just said, here's my idea and how I would do it. I didn't like, you know.
It's just that's how I write. That's just how I write. I have to have the whole idea.
Also, he already had this idea.
No, I didn't. I came up with it today. I just took the same character.
Story. Exactly. With zombies.
John, what are you doing? Why is it getting all...
like... He's unzipping his pants.
Yeah.
It sounded like he was sucking on something.
Yeah. Oh. What are you doing? And
Scott, who's... are you over there?
No.
I mean,
can't quite reach.
Because you can push in and then you can push out with the machine. And one is abductor and one
gym?
Is adductor.
I think, is it some dude telling you to do this?
No, it's what the like picture
is. Push in, push out.
No. Pull.
Yeah, that sounds
I'm
like
in
a
the ladies
thing.
Only area.
Okay, is it a lady telling you to do that? I'm open-minded.
It's what the machines say. There's like pictures and then it labels what it's called. You've never seen these?
I'm never allowed in the ladies section.
They have them in the men's section too.
I don't go there either. I'm not a man. I go to wherever they have weights that are about 3 pounds. Usually kids are surrounding them. And I just ask if I can borrow
That's
one.
That's creepy. That you're the creepy guy.
I'm just like, kid, I can lift that. Can I have that weight? That looks like it's right about my speed.
At that rate, you could just lift the child.
Well, that's kidnapping.
Yeah, they don't really appreciate it when strange men pick them up.
No, found that they out might. The hard way. Nope, they don't. They never, ever do. All right, you guys ready? Looks like she's ready.
Yep.
You done your fidgeting?
Yep.
All right.
I wasn't fidgeting. I was just sending that email because I can't do it on my phone with the signature. It's really stupid.
You can. I will show you how to do it.
I added, but like my Gmail.
I have a Pixel. I do it all the time.
Well, then, yeah, you're going to have to show me because mine is just, it sets like you can set a mobile signature.
What kind of phone do you have?
A Pixel.
Thank you. 2XL. I'll show you how to do it later.
Okay.
The exact same phone I have.
So you can add like hyperlinks or no?
Yes.
You do? Okay.
Because I will show you later.
Well, because I don't like, I think emails
but
look.
It's not later yet.
I'm just saying that I think emails look, I like the hyperlink where it says what the web, what the business is and that links you to their website versus www.thehowlettoutsider.com. If you feel
hey,
what I'm
can
saying.
Can I ask you guys a question?
Sure.
Is right now or is right now later?
Apparently, it's later. Let's go. Let's
it's
move.
It's 6. Oh, no, it's 7:20 for you.
Yeah, it's 7:20. All right, here we go. Oh, you started sighing. I can't talk if you're like. Like you just ran up a flight of stairs on your way to get some pork chops.
Push.
I was just trying to get my deep breath out.
Okay, is it out?
Well, and then I started laughing because I saw your face.
And you're still talking. Are you done?